Give thanks for the many ways that we have experienced worship already this morning. Indeed, melt our cold hearts, let tears fall like rain. Come change our love from a spark to a flame. Amen. Starting on Pentecost, we began a series together entitled Liberating Church. Whether this is your first Sunday joining us for the series, or if you haven't missed one yet, we're asking together how we might reconsider and reimagine concepts within the Christian tradition, concepts that we've made quite a mess of over the centuries, concepts that we've distorted so badly that we've looked more like Caesar than Jesus. This series invites us to place the experiences and insights of the dispossessed, the poor, the violated among us at the center of our theological work, because it is within these experiences that we can most clearly see the heart, the moral center of the Christian tradition. This goes for the day that we keep holy, the day that we gather for worship, the day that we call Sabbath. As you know, these last months, we've been having many conversations about our Sabbath day and how to keep it holy. Together, we've asked whether our worshiping life reflects our commitment to be an ecumenical, multiracial, multi-ethnic Christian body that reaches out to the world with the good news of Jesus Christ. We've talked about what it means for our worship to be multicultural and informed by traditions of liberation, like the historic Black Church and Latin American liberation theology. While I won't take the time to summarize all that we've heard and learned together, I will say it was clear that we deeply desire to keep leaning into multicultural worship here at Calvary. This project isn't easy or always comfortable, as Josh said very well, because we know that for our worship to be truly multicultural, we have much work to do to decenter white Protestant worship. 156 years is a long time. And so we turn to our lectionary text this morning, and we find ourselves with two passages about the Sabbath. I can't say that I had a robust understanding of the theological resonance that Sabbath held as a child. Pretty much what I understood was Sabbath was the day that we went to the church and then to the Piccadilly cafeteria for lunch. To get there, we walked through the mall, past all of the locked and darkened stores. Only the cafeteria was open at 12:30 on Sundays. Blue laws in South Carolina meant that the retail stores couldn't open until later in the afternoon. So early on, I saw Sabbath as the day that you couldn't do a whole lot of things. And even as I learned a little more about the heart of Sabbath and the intention of Christian worship, I must say I still saw it mostly as a long list of things you couldn't do on Sundays, which meant that my understanding of faith looked a lot like a long list of things you could and couldn't do. I certainly didn't see Sabbath as freedom. Nor did I see it as a reorientation of life or a vision for our life together. Remember the Sabbath and keep it holy basically meant do the right things and not the wrong things today, especially. Today's Hebrew lesson probably sounded familiar. It comes from the Ten Commandments as recorded in the book of Deuteronomy. Observe the Sabbath and keep it holy. Even though this is where it's written down in the law, the practice of Sabbath actually began before this, before the covenant with God was made. I'm going to venture to say that the ancient Israelites were some of our very first liberation theologians. leading us to the heart of life together with God. You see, they had been enslaved in Egypt for many, many years. They lived under the oppressive empire of Pharaoh, as slaves making bricks to build bigger and bigger pyramids and higher walls to protect the empire. They never got a moment to rest. They never got a second for Sabbath. They never had the chance to practice a different kind of community and life together. After they finally escaped the hands of Pharaoh and are freed from slavery, they wandered around in the desert with Moses for 40 years. During this time, they learned to trust God, and they learned to live together in a new way. They learned to live into freedom. But it wasn't easy. As they were hungry and thirsty, God provided for them water from a rock and manna, bread from heaven. Hopefully you got some of the amazing bread at the bake sale this morning. If not, please be sure to stop by the table after the service. And every day, there was just enough manna for that one day. They tried to store it up and collect more than they needed, but if they did, the excess would rot. But one day a week, on the sixth day, they would get a two-day supply of bread. God tells them this is so that they do not have to work on the seventh day, so that they might rest together, so that they might enjoy the freedom of Sabbath. By the time they establish the covenant with God, when the law is given over to Moses and the Israelite people, the Sabbath commandment is probably the least surprising of the ten. They'd been at this rhythm with God for a while already. It's easy enough to stop there, to think the Sabbath is little more than a weekly holiday, a day of rest where we brunch and barbecue. And while I'm not knocking the importance of rest or a good brunch, as we look at the Sabbath commandment in Deuteronomy, we see that it's about much more than rest. Observe the Sabbath day and keep it holy, as the Lord your God commanded you. For 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but on the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. You shall not do any work. And here's where it gets radical. You or your son or your daughter or your male or female slave or your ox or your donkey or any of your livestock or the resident alien in your towns, so that your male and female slave may rest as well as you. Remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out from there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day. Sabbath was a radical reordering of life together. Sabbath was about the creation of a just society where God said everybody gets to rest. The slave, the immigrant, your sons and daughters, everybody. This was the day they actually practiced living into equality and community, into equal ground and the freedom from social stratification. The point wasn't for it to be just a one day a week kind of thing, but rather a way to practice living into freedom and a new way of life together. As Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel imagines it, part of the gift of the Sabbath is to invite it into each day so that Sabbath becomes not just one day a week, but a reorientation of every day. Unlike their former life in Egypt, Sabbath challenged the Israelites to remember that life was not meant for slavery and constant production and debilitating hierarchies. Life demanded a different kind of economy altogether, an economy of neighborliness. If we keep reading the book of Deuteronomy, we see that Sabbath goes beyond a weekly practice and gets even more radical. Every 7 years, debts are forgiven and indentured servants are set free. And every 50 years, every seventh 7 years, the scriptures describe something obscenely radical called the Year of Jubilee, where land is returned to its original owners and slaves return home to their families. Think of Jubilee as an ancient form of reparations. Old Testament scholar Patrick Miller says that the command to keep Sabbath is the primary biblical impetus for social justice in the human community. So if this was such an important part of the covenant with God and for life together, what happened? What went wrong? How did we get to this moment in today's gospel lesson where the Pharisees are trying to trap Jesus into breaking the Sabbath so that they can have him killed? Obviously, the ancient Israelites knew that Sabbath was important and set out to protect it. They knew it was a critical practice and ritual of their life together, and yet, when we arrive at today's story, Sabbath seems almost unrecognizable. It looks like a system where the rule of law is more important than the humans that the law intends to serve and protect. Sound familiar by chance? Jesus steps into this reality and consciously provokes it. In the first part of the gospel lesson, we see the disciples plucking the hands of grain on the heads of the grain on the Sabbath. But the text doesn't even actually say anything about the disciples being hungry. It reads more like they're playing with the grain as they walk along, talking with Jesus. By the time Jesus arrives in the synagogue, the second part of the gospel lesson, the trap has been set. And Jesus sees it clearly, and it makes him angry. As he often does, Jesus uses the power of a well-framed question to shift the conversation, and he asks those gathered, "Is it lawful to do good or to do harm on the Sabbath, to save life or to kill?" The Pharisees remain silent, and Jesus tells the man to stretch out his hand, and as he did, he was healed. Sure, Jesus could have waited until sunset to heal the man, but Jesus doesn't want him to suffer any longer as an outcast. Jesus heals him right then and there, restoring him to community. Though it eventually costs him his life, Jesus intends to set people free. And today we see that Jesus sets the Sabbath free so that it might do its liberating work among the people once again. Theologian and scholar Wendy Farley suggests that the Pharisees represent the basic temptation of religion to absolutize those things that mediate faith to us, things like the practice of Sabbath. The terrible implications are that religious commitments can render us indifferent to human suffering and community, as they were to the man with the withered hand, waiting to be healed. The gospel, however, opens hearts to the ubiquitous presence of God and gives birth to compassion and joy. Farley challenges us, however, to have pity for the Pharisees because they are so much like us. The kind of people who would choose development and productivity over Jubilee. The kind of people who would choose what keeps us comfortable over what keeps us challenged. So we return to the place where we began this morning, considering how worship might be reclaimed and reimagined. I think much is waiting for us in the vision of Sabbath community. Worship is the time that we gather each week to practice Sabbath community, to practice the economy of neighborliness, to live into radical equality, to pursue God's vision of justice. Worship is the time where every Sunday for 156 years and counting, this community has gathered to listen for what God is up to in the world. As people began to gather here 156 years ago, they knew that Sabbath community, the day we call holy, could not also be wedded to slavery. So that group of abolitionists set out to live the Sabbath vision set forth right here on this corner. We're still trying to live out and live into that vision of Sabbath justice, Sabbath community, Sabbath freedom and liberation together, not just for one day a week or utopia inside these doors, but for the reorientation of every day, for the whole of creation. Amen.